How are those Tuesdays?
All right, we're going to go ahead and get our council meeting started. It is Tuesday, October 16th at 7:16 PM. And we are going to start with a pledge given by Jaren Wonder, and then our invocation will be given by Councilor Anderson. So Jaren, come on up to the microphone and then it's all yours.
Just say what the audience prefers.
The audience prefers. Ready to give.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Father in heaven, we're grateful for this opportunity that we have to gather tonight for the council meeting. We're thankful for the free government that we have, that we get to assemble and make decisions for our city, that we get to participate in this process. We're thankful for our residents, and we ask the blessing upon them, their safety and continued happiness. We are grateful for our local, state, and federal leaders, and ask that they be guided in their choices. And we ask that a spirit of peace and friendship will exist here in this meeting tonight. And these things we say in the name of Jesus Christ, amen.
Thank you. TA, we have item number two and approval of the agenda for tonight.
I will move that we approve tonight's agenda.
That motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
I'll second
that. Seconded by Councilmember Ellsworth. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, so before we move on to item number three, I just want to recognize, we have several scouts here tonight, but I do want to recognize Troop 1138. They did some service work here in our city recently where they did some cleanup of trash around the golf course and also collected some golf balls and returned to the golf course. Is that right? Did we get everything? So we really appreciate the work that you guys did and the service that you provided out to our community. And we just wanted to pass these out to you guys and thank you. How many are in your troop? Just the four of you?
Yes.
Okay. Come on up real quick.
Hey. Mayor, I will mention they picked up a lot of trash.
Yeah, good for them. Thank
you.
I will move that we approve the minutes of the September 18th, 2018 work session and city council meeting.
Motion made by Councilmember Anderson. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Seconded by Councilmember Geddes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Passed unanimously, so we will move on to item number 5 and 6, city report, starting with Mr. Goodwin.
All right, thank you. On the recreation side, ski bus and junior jazz registrations have now opened. We have, over the course of the last few years, have had the largest junior jazz program for a city of our size, and we look forward to seeing that trend continue. So good job to Greg and his staff. Soccer, tot soccer, flag football have all wrapped up. There were, as you can imagine, the last couple weeks, there was a number of weather issues at the close of the season, but it was still wonderful programs. Golf is also starting to wind down, as we've seen a rise in the cold weather. So right now, tee times will be on a first-come, first-served basis. So if you still need to get out there and golf, get with Greg. November 6th, there will be no city council meeting. We encourage everyone to vote that day or have their ballot mailed in by that day. And December 18th, there's going to be a meeting change. We're going to move our December meeting from the first Tuesday in November the third Tuesday in December, and that's to accommodate some RFP proposals for Harvey Park.
So we have a meeting on the 4th originally.
Yeah, that one's not going to happen.
Not going to happen?
Okay. We're going to, and I'll email this out. We're going to have that meeting is going to be on the 18th.
And I will most likely not be here.
Yeah.
Very highly recommend.
And Canyon Road project is slated to be completed towards the end of November, and if any changes to that happen, we will be updating the city website and weekly update to reflect those changes. The PI system has been winterized, so if you go to turn on your sprinklers, it won't work. A big thank you to Public Works for their dedication and their hard work day in, day out to providing that service to the city. And then also the field audit has been completed, and we'll be looking forward to having them possibly on the December agenda. Is that when we're planning on them?
Most likely, yes.
Most likely, that December 18th meeting, we'll have their audit report.
Because the first Tuesday in January is New Year's Day, they're most likely.
Oh, yeah. One other thing is the first Tuesday in January is January 1st, so that meeting will also probably be moved either to the Wednesday or the following week, if we need to have one.
Or just the third.
Yeah, we'll stay in touch on that one. So that's all I have.
All right, Councilor Anderson.
I don't have anything.
All right, Councilor Dennis.
I have
nothing. Councilor. All right, as far as mine go, we did have a legislative policy committee this week. It looks like the big topics for the legislature again are going to be affordable housing and water. So we are going to continue to express our views on the impact that those bills have on city of our size, and we'll keep you guys informed on that. I did attend our first Utah Lake Commission meeting as a member of that commission. And realize I have a lot to learn about everything related to Utah Lake, but we'll get there. But this last meeting, they talked about how they're going to be creating a map of all the inflows and testing that water. They're trying to figure out what's causing all of the pollution issues now, because there's a lot of focus on that. They're also very involved in any kind of proposals that will be, they're coming forth with development on the lake, whether that's an island on the lake, whether that's a bridge over the lake. This commission will be involved in that. And of course, the city's biggest concerns are how all of these proposals relate to, as far as picking up the lake, the sewer rates, and how that will be impacted, how that will impact the city. So I'll keep you guys updated on that. I went to a MAG meeting. I brought these maps just in case you were interested. This is the Trans 50 plan we're working on now that shows proposed highways and mass transit system for the county. If you want to take a look at that, you're welcome to. And then lastly, as Chella mentioned, that meeting in December is going to be changed to December 18th because we are talking about the bids for Harvey Park. One of the things that we are going to do in November is our November work session. I can't remember the date now. November 20th. At a November 20th work session, we are going to have that whole meeting dedicated to just an analysis that staff is working on right now on the cost of putting Harvey Park together. So some of the things that we're talking about are how are we going to build this phases? Are we going to finance this? If we build Harvey Park, we know that there's an increase in expenses specifically related to maintaining that park. So that includes Wilkinson's to maintain it that way. That includes the possibility of adding another member of our public works staff. We just talk about water, which we're doing tonight, but also water for the park. You know, some of the park will be watered through recycling of the splash park. Is that enough? Are we going to need more water? Staff's working on an entire analysis for this, and coming back to say, do we have the manpower and the revenue right now to handle a park of this size? And if not, are we willing to take the next steps, whether that's raising taxes, assessing a fee, what that looks like? Because before we vote on that bid in December, I really wanted the council to be aware of what the ongoing costs are going to be. So at that November 20th work session, just please come prepared with any questions that you might have on maintaining that park, building that park, so we can have a very in-depth conversation, not just amongst us, but with residents before we have to bid, accept a bid on that in December. So let us know if you have any questions on that. And that's all that I have on city reports. So we will move on to item number 7, which is a few action on resolution. Yes, absolutely.
Denise did report on it, but the loan peak.
Oh, yes. Oh, the loan peak meeting, it went very well, actually. Sorry.
I should have reported. I'm sorry.
So the loan peak meeting went fine. We discussed the fact that we are leaving the district. Lewis and Young presented to the board, and provide some options for us to meet, whether that was, there were two options. Either we could, they could keep all the assets and deduct our portion of the portion of those assets from our portion of the liabilities, and we just pay that amount. Or we could go through this process of trying to figure out how we're going to divide up assets and how to fairly do that and what the value is and what they need to keep. And Lewis and Young and David Church both agreed that that was going to be very messy, that the contract wasn't really written with the intent that someone was going to leave. And so that could be messy, that you could spend a ton of money paying professionals just to figure that out, and it wouldn't save anybody any money. So at the end of the day, the district agreed unanimously to option A, which is what we preferred as well, which was to just figure out our portion of the assets, deduct it from the liabilities, and we'll just pay that amount and we're done. They are working on a memorandum of understanding right now, and we have some thoughts on some things that we'd like to add to that, but the MOU is actually, I thought, very well done as well. It talks about the transition, that we're still full members with the same benefits and everything until our contract expires, and how we'll work together. And I have to say, I really appreciated all the elected officials on that board. There was no contention. There was, between the elected officials, there was no animosity. It was very much a feeling of, we still have other things to work on. I think Brian Braithwaite, he joked about, they're not building a wall between Highland and Cedar Hills now, you know. So they acknowledge that we have a lot of other areas that we still need to work together and collaborate. We still are friends. This is not going to be a contentious thing. Yeah, yes, and so the board meeting, I thought, went well. All right, so item number 7, review action on a resolution related to an interlocal agreement with the Utah Lake Commission.
Yeah. So Mayor Reese mentioned that she has attended a Utah Lake meeting, and this is the interlocal cooperation agreement that actually puts us on the board there. There are a number of issues that Utah Lake is facing. I think the biggest one is the quality of the water and making sure that it meets all the necessary standards for recreation. But the last few years there's been the algal blooms, and there's a lot of finger pointing as it goes around the valley as to why that is, and it's not necessarily, I don't think there's a clear cut reason why. I think the big question here is what's the purpose of the Utah Lake agreement? It's to promote multiple uses of the lake to balance access, use development, ecological value, and economic benefits, and to foster communication and coordination between land use, shoreline protection, recreation, public facilities, and natural resource planning. This is a 50-year interlocal agreement, so committing to this for the long haul here. And then the responsibilities of the commission, they're supposed to create a master plan for the lake, and there's a number of ideas that get thrown out about that lake and what it's going to be and what it's not going to be. So it's interesting to watch that as it goes forward. The governing board is an appointed elected official from each of the established municipalities, so it will be the mayor or council or representative. And so that's the agreement. And they've already listed us in this interlocal, this proposed interlocal, as one of the voting members. Are there any questions on the interlocal? I hope we've got a chance to go through it.
And just so you know, we did send it to Joel. He did review it. So it's right up to Joel.
How long has the Utah Lake Commission been organized?
A long time.
Really?
There's been a reluctance on the city's part to participate. Given that we have no shoreline, so I think there's maybe a feeling that our interest bends at our border. I kind of feel like that may be a little short-sighted in that we're part of the Utah Lake water area, and how that lake, what happens at that lake does affect us on some level. It may not be as direct as if we had a marina on the lake, but nonetheless it still affects us. Not to mention that we are members of the TSSD sewer district, and that discharges into the lake. So we're concerned about that as well. However, that's probably the cleanest water that goes into the lake.
Who sits on that board right now?
I do. In fact, their proposal, they're so concerned about some of the perception that the algal bloom has, because there's a number of discharge plants that feed into that lake. If you go to the spot where it discharges, it's actually clear, crystal clear water, and as it spills out, you can see the muck and stuff that's already in the lake. So they're trying to do a real campaign on saying, look, this is our level of commitment to discharge clean water into, they watch their phosphorus outputs. And that's really where the algae comes from, is too many nutrients in the water. So they're very concerned about that, especially the perception that they're the ones causing it. So they're looking at some PR things that they could be doing to inform the public what they do, what their role is in regards to the lake. But that you do sit on that board, and it does affect Utah Lake. So there is a concern of this.
Right, and that's one of the things that the people that you mentioned, Commissioner mentioned, is that they are currently mapping all of the inputs for the lake. Figure exactly that out. So, and other cities like Tyler and Alpine, Woodland Hills, that also don't have different property use zones as well, because it is still a recreation location for Utah County, and it impacts our sewer rates, and so we want to be involved in that process.
Mayor, correct? Yeah, so I reviewed the interwoven agreement, and the number that said there can't hold additional financial obligations on the city. You got to be how late commission wants to do with the something bid. They have to come back to the vote. And I thought that was very important. That would be my primary answer. So yeah, probably we'll have a member on there, but it's not going to change unless they come back.
Questions from the council? Not, I'll take a motion.
I move to approve resolution 2018. Authorize the mayor to sign an interlocal agreement for Cedar Hills to become a member of the Utah Lake Commission.
Thank you. I have a motion by Councilmember Geddes. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Seconded by Councilmember Anderson. We need a roll call vote. Councilmember Anderson?
Aye.
Councilmember Geddes?
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth?
Aye.
Motion passes. We move on to item number 8, which is a review action on a resolution making assignments to members of the city council, staff, and residents of certain boards, committees, and entities.
So it's necessary to follow. We have to appoint individuals to serve on that board, and the proposal is that Mayor Reese would sit as the primary member of that board, with Councilmember Anderson as the alternate, and this also adds myself as the alternate for the North Utah Valley Animal Shelter.
Do you need to? Did you need to add your appointment also to the dispatch?
We've done that dispatch for a while ago.
It already got taken care of. Okay, good.
Any questions on that? All right, I will see your motion.
All right, I'll make a motion to approve resolution 10162018B. Resolution assigning members of the city council, staff, and residents of the city of Cedar Hills, Utah, to certain boards, committees, and entities.
Motion by Councilmember Ellsworth. Is there a second? Seconded by Councilmember Geddes. Councilmember Anderson.
Aye.
Councilmember Geddes.
Aye.
Councilmember Ellsworth.
Aye.
Motion passes. So we move on to our final item, which is a discussion on water usage and conservation.
All right. I don't know how many of you read KSL today, but one of the headline stories was that Governor Herbert announced on Monday that the state is in a severe drought emergency, marine emergency. I've had a number of discussions with staff on what our water plan is in the future, and there's a number of concerns that we have in our ability to continue to provide this service, culinary and pressurized irrigation, in the manner that we're doing right now. So we're trying to be very thinking long-term here. The current situation, though, says 16 of Utah's top 49 reservoirs are less than 20% full, and 8 of Utah's top 49 reservoirs are less than 5% full. So there's a severe crisis going on. It goes on to say we can't control precipitation, obviously, but we can find opportunities to decrease our water use all year long. We look for opportunities to conserve. We can keep a lot more water in our reservoirs, which will really help if we have another dry winter. So remember last winter, we didn't really have a winter. I know that was a concern to staff. As we look at our, as we go into each resort, and we just exited our water season from the aquifer. Summer water season officially ended. But as we do that, we can look behind and say, okay, where were we and what are the challenges going forward? In 2015, city implemented water restrictions on residential water use. So if you have an address that ends in 1, you can water Monday, Wednesday, Friday. If you have an address that ends in an even number, it's Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. And you can see that in 2014, it's this light blue, and it's this kind of top here. It kind of dips down the middle of that year. We had a very wet August. So at the tail end of that year, we saw people turning off their sprinklers. We had a monsoon moment, like we did the other week. But this year, and so every other year, we had water restrictions. The first 2 years following our water restriction, we saw maybe a 3% decrease in overall usage, which it's hard to attribute that to water enforcement. It could just be that it happened that way. But overall, you see that we can expect a certain amount of usage throughout the year. 2017, 2018 on this red and orange lines here. So for these years, we actually exceeded our use from when we had water restrictions. And that's because we have, this last summer was an extremely dry summer. We had a lot of rain. So it's more, weather has more impact on water use than any enforcement measures, kind of what we're trying to say. That's not to say that water restrictions are bad, it's just to say that as a method of decreasing water use, they're very ineffectual. So as we go, as we're looking back on the last watering season, I think it's important to know where we've been and kind of see the upcoming challenges as we look at this winter and we watch the snowpack levels. There is a chance that there will be limited water supply should we have another dry winter. And so this is where the city needs to really come up with a plan, I think, that needs to, one, educate the residents and also what we should be doing ourselves. And this spills into other discussions that we're going to be having, especially when it comes to Harvard Park. This is where, you know, the city needs to be very upfront with residents and having a discussion. I think that's one of the things that this council, this mayor, that's what we're very good at, is having that conversation with residents, is that, yes, we're trying to put in the park, while at the same time realizing that there are very many challenges as it relates to water. So how do you go about that? I think that's going to be a focal point for staff, and over the course of the next 6 months as we discuss this. You know, we go into a budget retreat every year in the end of January, and I think that water is going to be a focal point. Mary said that it's already going to be a focal point for the legislative session. Last year there was a bill that did not pass. But that bill would have required secondary water metering to be for cities to require secondary water meters, and that the bill stated that it would be implemented over the course of about 8 years. Well, we have roughly 2,500 residential pressurized irrigation connections. So even over the course, and each connection would cost about, we estimate, anywhere between $800 to $1,000 to install. So even if you did it 10% a year, you're still looking at $250,000 a year to spend on it installing these water meters. One of the reasons it didn't pass was that it was an unfunded state mandate. However, the state could come back with another bill that says all new construction is required to have a secondary water meter, in which case the city will have to make certain other adjustments. Nonetheless, there is a focus on how we conserve water, and there's a lot of good resources at stake that I think the city needs to be more proactive of in informing residents. It's not that we want everyone's lawn to be crispy. We just want them to make sure that they're not overwatering, that when they are watering, they're watering their lawn, they're not watering in half their driveway and half the street. There's things that we can do. So that's really kind of the point here. I'm not going to go into an in-depth discussion tonight on this, but I think as we watch the legislative session, these are the things that are going to be of a concern to the city. So any questions from the mayor council?
This is going to be an item on our retreat, probably.
Yes, absolutely. I promise you it is.
And we have already been told that most likely the bill that will come before the legislature this year is requiring secondary meters and all new construction.
Yeah.
That one has a high possibility.
I think it does. Because then it's not an unfunded state mandate, it's simply a cost that's absorbed by development. One thing, and Jeff can attest to this, is that the state requires us to report water usage. And with meters on every, culinary meters on every home, it's very easy to report what the culinary usage is. For pressurized irrigation, though, it's a little bit more difficult because not only do we not have meters, we have to go out and see what's pumped. So we know it's coming out of the ground, but we don't know where it's going. We don't know where it's leaking. And that's where it becomes a bit of a challenge. So as the state requires cities to become more and more thorough in their reporting, it's going to be more and more difficult to do that without meters. I'm just saying that as a matter of fact. This is a discussion that each community along the Wasatch Front is going to be having as we look at population projections in the area over the next 30 years, what's going to happen and how they're going to be able to provide that service, how they're going to provide water to all those people.
And one quick question, do those take into account per capita increases, or is it just gross increases?
It's just gross. It's just what we use.
So you have to factor a little bit of that.
You do, and there's probably some of that.
I mean, I know it's not gross. Significant, but
it's gross. I think really the only point I'm trying to make here is that if you expected to see, and I remember that night when we instituted the water restrictions, there were some arguments that you could see 10-15%, you know, and if you didn't, then we would get rid of them. And I'm not saying we get rid of them. I'm just saying that water restrictions as we have them are not an effective measure of decreasing residential water use.
And by the way, did the meters that we have out there get read this summer on regular basis?
The center one.
Which one?
The secondary water meters that we've installed with some properties.
Were they read on a regular basis this year?
They have been read. I haven't seen what the final calculation. We usually just tally them up at the end of the season.
Yeah. I know that first year we did them like every month. And
yeah, so I think like this, it's one trend line doesn't tell you anything, but as you start to see year over year, you can really get a sense of where you are as a city. And the same thing with the secondary water meters. It's education over time.
That first year, we really did education with residents. Thing. I mean, we had the meter outside that we could show what we were using, so we provided a lot of education. A lot of cities do water restrictions, and I think the other thing that we struggled with, and it's based on the size of our city, and we don't have a large number of staff, but we've been very lenient when it comes to people watering when not supposed to. There hasn't been much enforcement, and again, that's hard to do for a city of our size, and so that's what we're saying is we need to start talking about all of that. What are our options? Do we want to enforce more? Do we want to get rid of restrictions because we don't have the capacity to do more enforcement? Do we want to start phasing in PI meters? Do we want to provide more education? What is it that we're going to do to try to address this issue and start preparing for what the state's going to tell us we're going to do? Start having a plan for that.
Well said. My position has always been to not go to enforcement first, but the education and those things. So I'd like that to be the top of the list of what we need to do for good education on new technologies, on better practices. Is there a better way to present it to more people about it? I did map this out last time we talked about this. It really does relate to the weather. So maybe it just has to be a very clear conversation. Okay, we understand it's going to get hot here, so maybe just keep your lawn green, can't avoid watering so much, even when it's hot.
Yes.
Well, and we also talked about, I mean, we changed our ordinance to allow for xeriscaping. I can't remember exactly.
We do allow percentage, not the whole front yard.
And so maybe we get to go further with that and allow for 100% xeriscaping if somebody wants to.
We also allow turf, too, remember?
Yes. Yeah. So those are additional conversations. Those are all the conversations that we want to start thinking about is what do we want to do as a city?
And there may be areas where as a city we have high as a
certified.
Well, and then as I say, there are some areas where as a city we may need to be the ones that lead out. So if we see a park strip, we say this is an ideal place to plant xeriscape and inform residents of what types of plants, what it could look like. We do that. If I know that the Parks and Trails Committee in the past, it's been a year or two since I've been on that committee, but they've talked about this roundabout out here to make that a xeriscape park and have people be able to drive around and see what that looks like. Because you know, the ground shop down on the Spirit Hills Drive is a bit of a focal point for the trees and Christmas lights, and this could be the same thing, but in a different manner.
Yeah.
And there are things that have been discussed, just nothing has been put into place. And I think that as the pressure tightens on the city to do something, it's kind of like housing where we have to do it. We want to be a little bit ahead of the curve. We want to kind of be proactive about it, not reactive.
I think we probably leverage the drive into community center here. That whole side is just, right now it's native. Maybe we clean that up and show what seriously it could look like.
I agree.
And right now, I think it's not that bad.
Why?
There's an easement.
Dude, you can landscape, you just can't put trees in, I believe, right?
Which ones?
Along the MWD, and Metropolitan Water District's easement all through there, and the
north side of the street.
Power lines. As you come into here.
Right.
You put a path on there.
You can't put trees, but you can't landscape it.
Yes.
That's what the guy told me.
It is.
That's happened a lot of negotiation.
Say what?
It is. Landscape native.
Yeah, we're thinking maybe seriously.
Use the sprinkler system when we requested it.
So yeah, they're escaping that.
Zero scaping.
So you gotta differentiate between zero scaping and zero scaping.
Yeah.
So
Zara has some land.
Zara has some, and there is some water that is required. It's like little usually drip systems. And that's always been the hang up with the easement, is that they don't want irrigation lines over there.
So zero.
So the path took a lot of work to get. We would talk about it basically.
I think if we approach it with the idea that we're trying to show the city what this can look like overall, they might get
connected. That would be a good area. And I think that there are also other areas if you're looking to kind of highlight this type of landscaping or other areas that you're doing as well.
So do some research and come prepared in January on the tree tips. Help us.
Okay.
Bring some ideas. Anything else from the council?
I'm good.
All right. I will take a motion to adjourn.
I need to adjourn.
Okay. Councilor, second by Councilor Geddes. All those in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you.